This is Mission to Israel, a broadcast ministry featuring author, teacher, and evangelist Ted R. Weiland. It's our prayer here at Mission to Israel that our time together will inspire you, give you insight into current events, and reveal your place in God's plan. Our address is Mission to Israel, Post Office Box 248, Scottsbluff, Nebraska 69363. Or contact us via the web at www.missiontoisrael.org. And now, here's Ted Weiland.
Isaiah chapter 33, verse 22. Once again, for Yahweh is our judge, Yahweh is our lawgiver, Yahweh is our king. He will save us. But the sad fact of the matter is, he's not. He's not king. He's not judge. And he's not lawgiver. He's certainly, at least to most people here in America today, he's certainly not king, judge, and lawgiver to the Democrats, or the Republicans, or the Libertarians, or the Constitutionalists, or to the vast majority of Christendom today, all of which are antinomian to one degree or another. And you cannot be antinomian, anti-Yahweh's law, and him be king, lawgiver, and judge in your life. Keep in mind that most of Yahweh's judgments upon Israel of old were not for total denunciation or absolute apostasy from Yahweh. That's not what he judged them for. Very seldom was that ever the case, where Israel completely apostatized, departed, left Yahweh completely behind. That's not why they were judged time and time again in the Bible, but it was not for the total renunciation, again, or the absolute apostasy from Yahweh, but for compromise. They were judged for compromise, for attempting to mix, amalgamate Yahweh's laws and his kingdom with the laws and the kingdoms of other gods and or other men. They were judged and condemned, you might say, for adulterating his laws and his kingdom. And it was for that reason that he often called what they were doing adultery. Because they were adulterating, they were mixing his ways, his perfect ways, with the imperfect ways of other gods and actually other men. And it's no different today. Yahweh will not accept substitutes. Ask Nadab and Abihu if you think he will. Ask Uzzah, who even with good motives in mind was still judged by Yahweh. Ask them, will he forgive compromises? Yeah, if we repent of them. But he will not accept substitutes and compromises or share his position with others, no matter how good their intentions like Uzzah's were. One of my objectives with this series is to demonstrate that his laws and his kingdom being perfect, why would we want to adulterate? Why would we want to adulterate it with man's inferior surrogates? And the best way, in my opinion, to do so is not by contrasting his kingdom and his laws with the worst that America has to offer, the Democrats, the Democratic Party, but instead by contrasting it with the best that America has to offer right now, the Constitutional Party. And it is far superior than the Democrats and the Republicans and the Libertarians put together. But I believe in contrasting it with the best, we can see again just how good, just how perfect he is, his laws are, and his kingdom is. And therefore, you might be a Christian if, versus you might be a constitutionalist if. Part 9. In the previous message, I shared with you a quote of Ronald Reagan's regarding the tax system that I'm sure many people found very interesting, and I thought maybe you'd enjoy a couple others that I gleaned here just recently that Reagan said as well. Reagan also said the following. He said, quote, "Government's view of economy could be summed up in a few short phrases. If it moves, tax it. If it keeps moving, regulate it. And if it stops moving, subsidize it." Pretty true. He also said, quote, "The most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help." And one more. It has been said that politics is the second oldest profession. I have learned that it bears a striking resemblance to the first. End of quote. And he was right. And once again, that's why Yahweh called it adultery. Time and again in his word, replacing him and his kingdom and his laws with another king or another kingdom and other laws, or even simply trying to mix the two. In God's, whether it's replacing him completely or replacing him in part, it's adultery in his sight. And it certainly does have a resemblance to the oldest profession. Back to Chuck Baldwin's, you might be a constitutionalist if. Number 12, you might be a constitutionalist if you understand that freedom has nothing to do with illegal immigration. And of course, as we all know, illegal immigration has become a major issue here in the United States of America, and especially since 9/11. The border between us and Mexico is an open sieve today, so much so that civilians have recently taken it upon themselves to patrol that border and to try to stop the illegal immigration, the millions of illegal immigrants, not only Mexicans, but Mexicans and others who are crossing that border. And Yahweh bless and protect them for doing so, or at least attempting to do so, because America's illegal immigration problems are absolutely huge in America today. They're immense and are taxing, pun intended, nearly every facet of American life today in one fashion or another. For example, the May 10th, 2005 New York Times ran an article by Robert Pear entitled, U.S. Pays for Care of Illegal Aliens, Treatment Money for Border States. Here's part of what is found in that article. Washington, the Bush administration said yesterday, which would have been May 9th, that it would start paying hospitals and doctors for providing emergency care to illegal immigrants. The money totaling $1 billion will be available for services provided from today through September 2008. End of that part of the end of that quote from at least that part of the article. I don't know if you caught it or not. Not only did I want to read that part of it for the shock of it, $1 billion, but I wanted to read it to you again because I caught something in that I did not catch this morning. I caught it this morning that I had not caught in previous readings of this, of that those two paragraphs. Catch this again. Washington. The Bush administration said yesterday that it would start paying hospitals and doctors for providing for emergency care to illegal immigrants. The Bush administration is going to pay for it? I don't think so. The Bush administration isn't going to pay for anything. It is not going to pay the $1 billion. I'll let you figure out who just might be paying that bill. Further into the article, under the new program, hospitals are supposed to ask patients for documents to substantiate payment claims. But Dr. Mark McClellan, administrator of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, said the hospital should not directly ask a patient if he or she is an undocumented alien. Oh, don't dare ask them that. The Bush administration abandoned a proposal that would have required many hospitals to ask patients if they were U.S. citizens or legal immigrants. Quote, within a quote, in no circumstances are hospitals required to ask people about their citizenship status, end of quote, McClellan said yesterday. The new program is run by the Department of Health and Human Services. McClellan said the department would not provide information about illegal immigrants to law enforcement officials for use in, quote, routine civil immigration proceedings, end of quote, within a quote, and end of quoting from that article. Oh, by all means, don't find out if they're illegal immigrants, that they might be dealt with. Let's just pay $1 billion for the next couple of years to pay for any hospital needs that they might have. And that's just the tip, the very tip of the iceberg concerning the problems relating to illegal immigrations. That's just the tip of it. But I ask you, what about unlawful immigration? That's just all illegal immigration. What about unlawful immigration? You see, a lot of people are all worked up and concerned and talking about illegal immigration, but how many are concerned and talking about the real problem in America? Unlawful immigration. That is not only allowed here in America, but is sanctioned here in America. I guarantee you, the constitutionalists are not talking about it. And moreover, they will never bring it to the table, in spite of the fact that if we didn't have unlawful immigration, we wouldn't have illegal immigration to speak of either. So what am I talking about? Well, the average Christian, regrettably, wouldn't have a clue as to what I'm talking about, nor what the difference is between illegal and unlawful immigration. Furthermore, once it is understood, there's not a pastor in 1,000, in probably 10,000 or more, who would touch the subject with a 10-foot pole, including the pronomian preachers in America today, and neither would the constitutionalist either, which is further evidence of their departure from Yahweh's laws. Again, I know that they speak about promoting Yahweh and his laws, but you'll find it a mix of where they do and a mix of where they don't. And this is one, even when they figure out what I am talking about, that they'll never bring to the table. To begin with, we need to once again discuss the difference between legal and lawful and unlawful and illegal, because many people think the two are equivalent with each other, and nothing could be further from the truth. In James chapter 4 and verse 12, James wrote that there is only one lawgiver. Let that sink in. He said, there is only one lawgiver. He could have said, in all the world. He could have said, in all the universe. That was the implication, that there is only one lawgiver, and Isaiah identified him as being Yahweh. Yahweh is our king. Yahweh is our lawgiver, and Yahweh is our judge. And therefore, man cannot, never has, never will make laws. There's only one lawgiver, and his name is Yahweh. Man can never make laws. He can only enforce or adjudicate the laws made by Yahweh, or make legal what Yahweh has made unlawful, or make illegal what Yahweh has made lawful. In the case of immigration, man has made legal, not all, but part of what Yahweh has made unlawful. For example, following is a portion from an article by Frosty Wooldridge, again, another man who's often articles show up on the internet, a lot of good sense information, much the same as Chuck Baldwin's. This was from April 28, 2005, found in newswithviews.com, if you want to read the whole article, entitled, I Will Not Go Quietly in the Night. And I just want to read two paragraphs from this, two opening paragraphs. Quote, at the current rate of invasion of 3 million Let me see here. I think this may be a quote within a quote. Yes, quote within a quote. At the current rate of invasion of 3 million annually, the United States will be completely overrun with illegal aliens by the year 2025. I'm not talking about legal immigrants who follow U.S. law to become citizens. In less than 20 years, if we do not stop the invasion, illegal aliens and their offspring will be the dominant population in the United States. End of quote within a quote, said Gilbert Gilchrist, director of the Minuteman Project. Next paragraph. According to the U.S. Border Control, quote within a quote, illegal aliens will have made such inroads into the political and social systems that they will have more influence than our Constitution over how the U.S. is governed. The ugly consequence of an ignored U.S. Constitution is already taking place. End of quote within a quote and end of quote. Now note Frosty's, Mr. Wooldridge's, I should say, terminology that he employed in that quote. He used the terms illegal aliens and legal immigrants. But what well-meaning people with good answers, I appreciate what he's intending to do here, with good answers to the wrong questions, like Wooldridge, don't understand, is that many, if not most, of the people who have legally immigrated to our shores for the last 150 years or so are unlawful aliens. Those who have legally immigrated are unlawful aliens, even if they are legal immigrants. Moreover, if instead of following the Constitution, we had followed the Bible as it pertains to immigration, today's illegal immigration wouldn't be a problem, because they wouldn't want to come here. At least to the degree they do today, not anywhere near. If we were following the one and only lawgiver and his laws, rather than the Constitution and its surrogate laws, this nation, rather than being a multicultural, or you might say multiracial, pluralistic melting pot as it is today, would be racially segregated. A nation of one race and one religion. And now you know why the constitutionalists aren't going to bring it to the table. And neither are the most Christians. And the Republicans and Democrats, of course, are so far out there in left field that they wouldn't even care about it in the first place. But even if they begin to see it, most aren't going to touch it with a 10-foot pole. Not because it's not the truth, because they're afraid of the baggage that might come with it if they do. And don't you dare, and I don't think anyone would hear, I'm sure you wouldn't, but somebody who might hear this on tape, don't you dare interpret what I just said as racist and supremacist. Because I assure you that one can be a separatist without being racist or supremacist. How do I know that? Because I'm a separatist. And I denounce racist and supremacist. And if you don't want to believe me on that, then you might possibly want to take the word of hundreds, and who knows how many more, maybe more than that. You might want to take the word of hundreds of black Nigerians and others to whom this ministry has sent hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars in free Bibles, books, and tapes since its very inception. I'm not a separatist because I hate other races. I'm a separatist because I love Yahweh and His laws, which require that His people live separate, segregated lives. Turn with me, if you would. I can't leave that standing without giving some evidence here, because, again, the average Christian has never heard any such thing and can't believe that it could be found in the Bible. So let's turn to Exodus chapter 33 to begin with. And I'd like to begin reading with verse 12. Beginning with verse 12, it says, "And Moses said unto Yahweh, See, thou sayest unto me, Bring up this people, and thou hast not let me know whom thou wilt send with me. Yet thou hast said, I know thee by name, and thou hast also found grace in my sight. Verse 13, Now therefore I pray thee, if I have found grace in thy sight, show me now thy way, that I may know thee, that I may find grace in thy sight, and consider that this nation is thy people." And notice he says, I want to know thy way, Yahweh. Know that our people would really get to the point where they would say, Lord, I want to know thy way. I don't want my way. I don't want my denomination's way. I don't want my churches or my preachers or my parents' way. I want thy way and only thy way. They'd really say it to where they would really go to his word, where it can only be where his way will can only be found, and really search and be willing to sacrifice anything for it. Verse 13 again, "Now therefore I pray thee, if I have found grace in thy sight, Yahweh, show me thy way that I may know thee, that I might find grace in thy sight and consider that this nation is thy people. And he said, My presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest. And he said unto him, If thy presence go not with me, carry us not up hence. Verse 16, For wherein shall it be known here that I and thy people have found grace in thy sight? Is it not in that thou goest with us? So shall we be separated." Or it could have been translated segregated. "I and thy people from all the people that are upon the face of the earth." He said, if it's true, then we'll be separated, Lord, as you've desired. Verse 17, and Yahweh responds, and he says, no, you don't understand me. I don't believe in segregation. I believe in integration. Where'd you come up with this crazy idea? Verse 17, and Yahweh said unto Moses, I will do this thing also that thou hast spoken, for thou hast found grace in my sight, and I know thee by name. He says, I will do it. I will make it happen. Leviticus chapter 20, verses 24 and 26, we also find this. It says, I am, where Yahweh himself is speaking, he says, I am Yahweh your God, which have separated you from other people. Verse 26, and you shall be holy unto me, for I, Yahweh, am holy, and have severed, segregated, separated you from other people, that you should be mine. And then also in Numbers 23 and verse 9, it says, The people, speaking of Israel, the people shall dwell alone and shall not be reckoned among the nations. And yes, I know that most of Christendom is going to respond to that, we understand that. But that was Yahweh's desire and his relationship with Israel under his laws under the old covenant. Well, in response to that, don't forget, if you, and most of Christendom doesn't probably even know this to begin with, so they've got to come to know it in the first place. But if you do know it, don't forget that the new covenant is his laws, the same laws written on the hearts of Christian Israelites. Hebrews chapter 8 and verses 8 through 10. That's not my idea. That's what the word says. Go read it for yourselves if you're not familiar with it, or you do believe that just can't be the case. And I'm sure there's the biggest vast majority of Christendom just couldn't believe that could be the case, even though they've probably read it like I did many, many times, until finally the scales were removed from my eyes to see what it really says. And it's really very clear. But the scales had been painted across my eyes by modern Christendom and what they think about the new covenant and who it was made with. Moreover, it wasn't only Israel that Yahweh separated or that Yahweh designed or desired to be separated. Turn to Deuteronomy chapter 32. Deuteronomy chapter 32 and verses 7 and 8. In verse 7, it says, Remember the days of old, consider the years of many generations, ask thy father, and he will show thee, thy elders, and they will tell thee. Verse 8, When the Most High divided the nations their inheritance, when he separated the sons of Adam, he set the boundaries of the people according to the number of the children of Israel. He separated. He not only separated, but he said, Here's the boundaries. Here's where I designed for them to be and for them to remain. That this last verse, verse 8, is essentially quoted by the Apostle Paul as Yahweh's standard, even, yes, under the New Covenant as well. In Acts 17 and verse 26, it says, "And has made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on all the face of the earth, and has determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation." End of quote. Paul, as he shared that with him, he had never said that. He had never shared with those, I believe, on Mars Hill there in Athens, if I remember this particular sermon correctly. He had never said that if it had changed under the new covenant, like so many Christians are teaching today. He said that God set their boundaries, quoting essentially, or at least referring back to Deuteronomy 32. And we might argue the first half of that, the meaning of the first half of that verse. But let me tell you, the second half unequivocally promotes segregation, not integration. Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 6. And again, please keep in mind that I'm not saying any of this because it's my desire to be segregated, simply my idea, that is, but because it's God's idea. And if it's God's idea, it's right. It's right not only for us, but it's right for all the other peoples too. And as I've said at other times dealing with this subject, history proves it. You can't mix the races without having problems for all of the races, and more so for the other races than for us. They're the ones that suffer even more than we do. And so this has nothing to do with racism or white supremacism. It just simply has to do with looking for God's way and wanting to do His way because it's right. Whether it's popular or not, it's right. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, and beginning with verse 14, it says, "Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship has righteousness with unrighteousness, and what communion has light with darkness? And what concord has Christ with Belial? Or what part has he that believeth with an infidel? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God, as God has said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Verse 17, wherefore come out from among them, be ye separate." That's what it says. "And be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you. And I will be a father unto you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty." Now, once again, there are going to be all kinds of objections. Someone is surely to counter that this passage is addressing religious, not racial, separation. To which I respond, not that there aren't some exceptions that people can't from other races and haven't in the past join themselves to Yahweh and embrace the covenants. But I respond, the two still, generally speaking, in this sense, cannot be separated. You cannot separate religious and racial segregation. Yahweh certainly did not believe that the two can be separated. Turn back to Deuteronomy chapter 7. Deuteronomy chapter 7, and beginning with verse 1, it says, "And when Yahweh thy God shall bring thee unto the land whither thou goest to possess it, and has cast out many nations before thee, the Hittites, and the Girgashites, and the Amorites, and the Canaanites, and the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than thou, and when Yahweh thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. Neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Thy daughter thou shalt not give unto his son, and his daughter thou shalt not take unto thy son. For they will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve other gods. So will the anger of Yahweh be kindled against you and destroy thee suddenly. But thus shall ye deal with them. You shall destroy their altars, and break down their images, and cut down their groves, and burn their graven images with fire. For thou art a holy people unto Yahweh," so forth and so on. Exodus, we find the same in Exodus chapter 23 in verses 32 and 33, where it says, "You shall make no covenant with them or with their gods. They shall not live in the land, lest they make you sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it will surely be a snare unto thee." End of that quote. And many people will hear those passages, and they will announce, they will proclaim, it's different today. It's different today. Yahweh said, do not leave them in the land. Do not marry them, and tear down their altars. And yet, because we obviously think that we know better than he does, thanks in part to the U.S. Constitution, by the way, we invite them into our land by the hordes. We marry off our daughters to them, and we allow them to build their temples, their mosques, their shrines, and their synagogues throughout the land. You can't go between Fort Collins and Denver, Colorado now without seeing at least two of their mosques or shrines, whatever they are, alongside the highway there. You used to never be there. No one would ever thought they could have ever been there, and they are now. And Christendom today somehow thinks it's different today. Well, I don't know what's different. Disobedience is disobedience. The same as it was then, it's the same today. And look at the results. It's reaped here in America precisely what Yahweh said it would reap. Isn't that what's happened? You think our daughters aren't being married off to them? Chuck Baldwin's number 12. You might be a constitutionalist if you understand that freedom has nothing to do. You might be a constitutionalist if you believe that freedom has nothing to do with illegal immigration. My email response, you might be a Christian if you believe that Christian nations should be segregated. The more integrated America has become, the more multicultural she has become, and the more multicultural she has become, the more unchristian she has become as well. Integration and Christianity do not mix. Bad company corrupts good morals. Doesn't work usually the other way around, not when you mix the two, whether it be on an individual or on a corporate level. Consider that in 1776, there were approximately 2.5 million people in America at that time. Less than 1% of the population at that time was collectively represented by 20,000 Catholics, 3,000 Jews, and only a few deists. More than 90% were white Christian Protestants. Now, in light of those demographics, it is an undeniable fact that whether we want to face up to it or not, it is an undeniable fact that the more immigrants, illegal or legal, it doesn't matter. That is, the more unlawful immigrants, which takes in both, we allow to enter and remain in this country, the less Christian this country becomes. You think we're still the Christian nation we once were back in 1776 when 90% of Americans were white, Caucasian, Israelite Christians? Nobody, everybody knows that's not the case. Our tolerance of other people, and not that we're not to be tolerant, we're to treat the stranger when he's sojourning amongst us. And there would be sojournings, times when they were obviously would have strangers here at times, sojourning amongst us, and we're to treat them in the same godly fashion that we're to treat the rest of our people. But our tolerance in other regard, as we're talking about immigration, our tolerance of other peoples and their religions is one of America's downfalls today, and is destroying Christian America. And nobody wants to be concerned about it. And the preacher who is, all of a sudden, as untruthful as it is automatically branded a racist or a white supremacist. In her book, The Official Guide to the American Marketplace, published in 1995, demographic specialist Cheryl Russell confirmed this paganizing of America. She's a demographics specialist, wrote a book wherein she deals with demographics, not with this in mind at all, just simply happened to be there in this book. But she deals with this paganizing of America as a result of immigration, whether it be illegal or legal. It doesn't make any difference. On page 252, here's what she said. Now, she's dealing with the American marketplace. That's what the book's about. It's not about this. She just is a demographics expert that knows what the situation is. And on page 252, she says, immigration will slowly change the nation's religious affiliation. Again, not just illegal, but legal immigration as well. Immigration will slowly change the nation's religious affiliation. Going on, she says, because most of the nation's immigrants are from Mexico, the Roman Catholic Church, which, by the way, is not Christian, that's my remark, not hers, is likely to gain adherence. The influx of Asian immigrants should boost the share of Americans who are Buddhist and Hindu, end of quote, and it certainly has. Martin E. Marty, a nationally acclaimed demographics expert and director of the Public Religion Project, also confirmed this pluralistic reality here in America, as we have it and have had it for some time. In the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, April 26, 1999, article entitled Scholar See Strength and Abundance of Faith by Tom Heinen quotes Martin Marty. Here's what we find. Listen carefully. He said, quote, no one noticed it at the time, but the biggest event affecting pluralism brought pluralism to America in a much greater way than ever before was in 1965, when immigration quotas that favored Europeans were altered. Let me read that again. No one noticed it at the time, but the biggest event affecting pluralism was in 1965, when immigration quotas that favored Europeans were altered, end of quote. By the way, this guy, I mean, he wasn't writing that. You can't call him a racist. He's promoting pluralism. He's for pluralism, not against it. Yahweh warned Israel that foreigners allowed to settle in her land would become snares and thorns to them. Turn to Numbers chapter 33. Numbers chapter 33, beginning with verse 50. And Yahweh spake unto Moses in the plains of Moab by Jordan near Jericho, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when you are passed over Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you, and destroy all their pictures, and destroy all their molten images, and quite pluck down all of their high places. And ye shall dispossess the inhabitants of the land, and dwell therein, for I have given you the land to possess it. Jump down to verse 55. But if you will not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall come to pass that those which ye let remain of them shall be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and shall vex you in the land wherein you dwell. Verse 56. Moreover, it shall come to pass that I shall do unto you as I thought to do unto them. Also in Joshua 23:11-13, it says, we find the following. It says, so take diligent heed to yourselves to love Yahweh your God. Excuse me. For if you ever go back and cling to the rest of these nations, taking for granted that they drive them out, he says, now, and if you go back and cling to them, these which remain among you and intermarry with them, so that you associate with them and they with you, know that certainly that Yahweh your God will not continue to drive these nations out from before you, but they shall be a snare and a